hear the singers cry. Smell the sea and feel the sky. Let your soul and spirit fly into the mystic.
Van Morrison getting us underway on Route 51 with a song about the mystical connection we as humans have to our oceans, lakes, and rivers. His lyrics will undoubtedly strike a chord with one of our guests, Wallace J. Nichols, the author of Blue Mind, the surprising science that shows how being near, in, on, or underwater can make you happier, healthier, more connected, and better at what you do. I'm Glenn Moberg. Nichols' research into the effects of our lakes, streams, rivers, and oceans on the human mind show that water reduces stress, increases creativity, and brings us peace in a world where we are often overwhelmed by the demands of work, technology, and the virtual reality of the internet. It leads Nichols to conclude that we as a society are undervaluing our water resources because we fail to include in our calculations the vital role they play in keeping us sane. Wallace J. Nichols is also one of the keynote speakers at the 39th Annual Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention, which takes place April 5th through the 7th in Stevens Point. To tell us about that and give his own perspective on the Blue Mind Summit that will be part of that convention, we welcome Eric Olson, the director of UW Extension Lakes. We, of course, want you to be a part of the conversation as well. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Wallace J. Nichols and Eric Olson, thanks so much for being with us today.
You bet.
Thank you.
Here.
And, Jay, do you mind if I call you Jay?
Please do. That's preferable.
All right, we will be doing that. We're going to start with Eric, though, so we get a feel for what's coming up in a couple of weeks. You've got quite a lineup for this year's Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention, Eric.
Yeah, that's correct. We really wanted to play up this mind and water connection. So our theme this year is minding our lakes and rivers, and we're going to have a number of different talks related to this sort of mental health consequence of water, which is really in addition to what we always really have at convention, which is a series of talks about the latest in lake science, aquatic invasive species, water quality protection, fisheries management, a whole gamut of different presentations. And really what we try to do is have a different theme each year, and this year it's going to be working with this Blue Mind concept.
There are three partners in this Lakes Partnership: UW Extension Lakes, which you direct, the Wisconsin DNR, and the stakeholders, people who own lakefront property, run lake protection associations, or businesses that depend on our lakes. Tell us how these three legs of the stool come together.
Yeah, I mean, it's really been a part of a 40-year history of really taking care of thousands of Wisconsin lakes. There's no way that anybody could do it all on their own. And the lakes and rivers of Wisconsin are actually owned by the public. We all own the lakes and the rivers. Our challenge is that not all of us wake up each day thinking, well, how am I going to take care of my lake? Instead, we hire the state government to do that for us. But even they look at the situation and say, well, with these this many lakes, we can't do it by ourselves either. So we leverage the real sincere interest and concern of property owners around lakes to try to engage them as partners to help take care of these resources.
And plus, the state can't do everything. If the property owners aren't doing what they need to do to take care of the lake is going to suffer.
Exactly. And there's lots of things that property owners can do just through voluntary actions of taking care of their shoreline area or managing runoff on their property. There's a whole range of things that we kind of hope our property owners will do. And the convention is a great place to learn about what are these different practices and what resources are available to help property owners do the right thing.
Now, besides the keynote speakers, there are literally dozens of workshops on environmental topics and political topics, too, related to the preservation of our lakes, rivers, and streams.
Certainly. Our partner, Wisconsin Lakes, is a nonprofit organization that really tries to represent all those lake associations and lake districts all across the state. And there is a policy dimension of this. Some of it is just the rules and regulations that the department is working on, and some of it has to do with legislation and other things. So we try to incorporate that into the convention because a lot of people want to talk about, well, what could we be doing better legislatively? What could we be doing better with these rules as well?
Wallace J. Nichols, you have the keynote address Thursday, April 6th. It is titled Go Deeper, the Seven Ages of Water. What are those seven ages?
Yeah, great to be here with you. I'm really looking forward to getting up to Stephen's Point. And we have a lifelong relationship with water that literally begins at birth when we actually come out of that 9-month period where we were hanging out in the dark underwater. So that's the first age, birth, and then the second age is play, which when we engage with water as kids, and then we go into the three middle ages that I refer to as the lover, the fighter, and the justice. And those three ages, we fall in love with places, we fall in love with people, we fall in love with ideas, and often all of that is facilitated by water. As the fighter, we fight for those ideas, we fight for our homeland, we fight for each other, and we need that water to cool off our red mind. And then as the justice, that's the longish middle age where we're probably most productive and most responsible, and we carry a lot of weight on our shoulders. And in that age, we need water as a source of creativity and a source of balance and yet another way to make and hold on to our friendships with the people that support us. And then later in life, we go into the age I call ebb and flow, which is where we start to slow down and gravity seems heavier than ever. Going back to the water is very therapeutic and healing. And then, of course, the last age is death. And oftentimes people want to return to the water. They want their ashes scattered over the water. They want their loved ones to gather by the water to remember them, to memorialize them. And that last age, being death, is also, there's a reminder that when we lose those we love, going to the water is a really good place to go and mourn and grieve and find solace. And so that's kind of the quick path through the seven ages of water.
Wow.
And each of those ages can overlap and circle back, but that's the chronology of our lifelong interaction with water. And, you know, protecting the lakes and the rivers of Wisconsin and of the world is incredibly important because they facilitate not only the ecological and the economic benefits, but also these massive emotional benefits that are often left out. And I'm so excited that Eric has decided to make it such a big theme this year at the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership meeting.
Now, you're not only one of the keynote speakers at the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership meeting, but you're also running a parallel convention of your own, Blue Mind 7, which gets underway a day earlier on April 4th with a lecture at UW-Stevens Point. Tell us about Blue Mind 7. What do you hope comes out of it?
Well, each year, this is the seventh year, and each year we've brought together psychologists, neuroscientists, and water practitioners, water professionals, to talk about this emotional piece that's usually left out of you know, the environmental movement or the ecological conferences. And this is the seventh year, and we decided that we'd been largely holding these conferences near the coast, west and east coast of the U.S., as well as the U.K., and we thought it would be great to bring Blue Mind 7 to Wisconsin, to the heart of the country, and in fact to the heart of the state of Wisconsin and Stevens Point, and really emphasize that this isn't just an ocean conversation. Of course, it's all waterways and it's all of our lakes and all of our rivers. So we're thrilled to bring folks from really all over the country coming in to keep this conversation going and to connect it with the Lakes Conference.
Now you mentioned the Blue Mind. In fact, that's the name of your book. But you also mentioned the Red Mind. What is the Blue Mind? What is the Red Mind? What's the difference?
Yeah. Well, the best way to understand Blue Mind is to start with Red Mind. And Red Mind, as you alluded to earlier, is sort of where we live most of the time. We wake up in the morning, maybe grab a couple cups of coffee, and we're off and running. And you know, modern life is busy. There's traffic. There's deadlines. There's, you know, my kids get the kids out the door to school, and then you're into email and text messages, and you might have a call like this to schedule, and your day just kind of burns through. We're really good at processing a lot of information and getting things done, and we feel like we can multitask. And sometimes there are things that happen that are extra stressful, mildly stressful, or even extremely stressful. And then we end the day with, you know, in front of another screen, and we slip off to sleep, only to start it all over again. And if that sounds at all familiar, you're normal, and it's pretty typical these days for modern humans to live a very connected, very busy, and at least mildly stressful existence. And so I call that red mind. Contrast that to logging out, turning off, stepping away from all of the screens, and finding some water, and finding the edge of the water, or finding a boat that will take you out on the water, or in fact getting into the water, where you leave all the visual and auditory stimuli behind. You leave gravity behind when you slip into the water, and your brain gets a break, and it moves into a mildly meditative state that I call blue mind, that allows you to think differently, to think maybe more creatively, to connect with the people that you're with in a different way, to develop your relationship through a different quality of conversation than may occur when you're rushed or stressed. And I refer to that as blue mind, and I think we can all relate to that on some level, whether it's a bathtub or taking a shower or taking a weekend vacation or a longer summer vacation on one of the great waterways around the state, around the country. And so I thought this idea would have already resulted in a book, so I set out to find the book in the library, but it wasn't there, so I ended up having to write it. So that's the story of the book.
Well, this is all really touchy-feely stuff, the way you're describing it, but you're a marine biologist. Tell us about the science that buttresses what you have always known instinctively about the importance of our lakes, rivers, and oceans to who we are as human beings.
Yeah, I became a marine biologist because I really liked the way it felt to be by the water so much. And so when I ask a lot of colleagues who work with water, they have a similar story. And so clearly these emotions drive not only a conversation like this, but they drive many people to design their life, their entire lives, around their relationship to water. So it's not an insignificant phenomenon. And then if you start looking into it, you realize that, yeah, it initially sounds kind of touchy-feely, a little self-helpish, but then you open the hood and you start looking inside of us to see what's going on, and you realize that it's neurochemistry and neurophysiology, neurobiology, and that our response to the world around us, to the environment, is quite complex, and usually it's the hardest science in the room. So if you bring in a neuroscientist to speak at a lakes conference, you know, a room full of ecologists and managers, they're going to be delivering probably the most complex, hard science of the day, even considering that you're dealing with a room full of freshwater ecologists. So I found the neuropsychology, the science, quite humbling. And I have my PhD in ecology and evolutionary biology, a master's degree in economics. And I was very, I would say, humbled, and I needed to do some catching up when I started cracking into the neuroscience journal. So it is certainly it's hard science, although it has a touchy-feely feel to it. It's us. It's, you know, the more we understand our own brains and our own brain chemistry, I think the better off we'll be in terms of deciding how to live our lives, how to design our days, how to raise our children, and even I think there are policy implications and public health implications of this science. So I agree. It does sound blue mind does sound a little poetic, but when you really kind of dig in.
Well, your book, Jay, your book starts with you wearing a headset covered with electrodes on the edge of a pier so that they could monitor what happens to your brain when you jump in the water. Tell us what that was all about.
Yeah, so, you know, the technology, really in the past several decades, the technology has allowed us to look inside our skulls and see what's going on. So EEG technology measures the electricity in the brain. fMRI, you know, is the brain scanner. That measures oxygen as a proxy for brain region activity. And so when you see those colorful images from the scientists who, depicting the neuroimagery, either that's EEG or usually fMRI technology that's allowing us to see what our brains are doing in real time. So you can now wear mobile EEG technology and go for a walk or go sit in a movie and have, or go surfing or jump in the water or swim laps and have your brain waves recorded. And that's fascinating because we used to only be able to study human behavior by, interviewing people and asking them how they felt and then maybe looking at their brain.
So what
after
conclusions
they were done using it.
What conclusions do you reach when you take a human being and immerse them in water, or put them at an oceanfront setting, and they've got these electrodes that are monitoring what's going on inside of the human brain. What changes do you see?
We see, well, first of all, we see a decrease in cortisol levels. So cortisol being stress hormone. That's really, really interesting and really important because cortisol also impedes healing. And so when we're stressed out, we heal more slowly. Cortisol promotes inflammation and impedes healing. So just the simple act of reducing your heart rate, your breathing rate, becoming more mindful, more present, reducing your stress, there's a physiological, a chemical response that is, in fact, healing. So there's that just right out the gate. That's a pretty straightforward kind of more chemical and a physiological response. We also see that instead of doing all the processing that we do, day in and day out of language and imagery and of making plans, and that's kind of occurs in the prefrontal cortex, which is the front of your brain, we see that when we relax, when we get into this meditative state in nature, that calms down and other activities step in that are more distributed, you could say, throughout the brain and are more contemplative, more self-referential. And people describe a feeling, I guess, of oneness or connectedness rather than that sort of very highly focused activity that we spend most of our day doing. That allows you to do things like daydream and come up with big new ideas, write poetry, write music. So you can actually see brain activity shift in response to the environment, and we can interpret that in terms of how much better we become at certain kinds of activities. So I think it's important to say red mind is extremely important. We need it. It's about survival. It's about getting things done. It's about reaching the finish line or staying out of danger and responding quickly. But we also need, what I call blue mind to stay healthy, stay sane. And one of the quickest paths to that blue mind state that I know of is water. And so that's why we're gathering right in the middle of Wisconsin to talk about blue mind and water.
And Eric Olson, again, if people want to see Wallace J. Nichols, find out more about Blue Mind, attend the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention or some of the presentations, what do they have to do?
Yeah, well, the easiest way to start participating with us is to come Tuesday night, April 4th at UW Stevens Point in the Dreyfus University Center. Jay Nichols, who you've just been hearing from, is going to be giving sort of this overview of what he's been experiencing in this realm of Blue Mind research and kind of warming us up. And that's, again, that's free and anybody can come to that. The Seven Ages of Water, it's the Blue Mind 7 Summit, and that's going to take place also in Stevens Point. There is a registration involved in that, so we are asking people to sign up ahead of time. We do have a couple of extra spots open right now. We have to close that registration on Monday, but we do want people to join us. And we have a fascinating array of speakers who are actually going to present on these different seven ages that Jay just gave the overview of. So you can find that on the UW Extension Lakes webpage. If you just Googled UW Extension Lakes, you'll get to us, trust me. And then if you go to our convention page, you'll see a little button there for Blue Mind 7, and that'll tell you a lot of stuff that you need to know. Or if you even just Googled Blue Mind 7, you'll find some pages that Jay has out there on the web and some pages that we have, Blue Mind 7 Summit. That'll steer you in the right direction.
Today on Route 51, our guests are Eric Olson, director of UW Extension Lakes, and Wallace J. Nichols, author of Blue Mind, the surprising science that shows how being near, in, or underwater can make you happier, healthier, more connected, and better at what you do. He is one of the keynote speakers at the 39th Annual Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention. That's April 5th through the 7th in Stevens Point. He'll also be speaking April 4th at UWSP. I'm Glenn Moberg. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. We're going to take a short break. Here's Loudon Wainwright III.
This summer I did swan dives and jackknives for you all. But once when you weren't looking, I did a cannonball. Did a cannonball. This summer I went swimming. This summer I might have drowned. But I held my breath and I kicked my feet and I moved my arms around. Moved my arms around.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a place to call home. Familiar voices, timely conversations, uplifting entertainment. Nearly 500,000 listeners tune in every week, benefiting from the programs made possible thanks to WPR member support. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
Catch a wave and you're sitting on top of the world. Ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, ah. Not just a fad, cause it's been going on so long.
Catch a wave, catch
all
a wave.
The Beach Boys taking us into our next segment of Route 51 with our guests Wallace J. Nichols, author of Blue Mind, and Eric Olson, director of UW Extension Lakes, as we talk about the 39th Annual Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention, April 5th through the 7th in Stevens Point. I'm Glenn Moberg, 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. Jay, that lyric is one that you quote in your book, Catch a Wave, you're sitting on top of the world.
That's how it feels, doesn't it? Well, and the same with Loudon Wainwright's lyric there on swimming, and I quote him as well, and I think it's... safe to say that a lot of musicians and artists and writers have found inspiration from water to create their art, their prose, their expression, and there are two great examples they just played. Yeah.
Now you believe that we as a culture, maybe the entire world, undervalues our water resources. So let's just look at the economic impact. Surfing is a $6.24 billion industry,
and growing indeed. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, and
massive economic impact. And if you take that number for any aquatic activity, whether surfing, stand up paddleboarding, swimming, paddling, all the aquatic activities, scuba diving, right down the list, and you can add up what people spend to do those things, and you know that number is findable. You know, you can get pretty close. But then what we usually leave out is the health and wellness additive benefit. So you get done surfing, you get done swimming, or you get off the river, and you're feeling pretty good. And if you feel a little more productive, you feel a little more grounded, you're maybe a little bit nicer, a little less stressed. And that's probably good for your general health and well-being. It's probably good for your relationships. It's probably good for your job. And that translates in the real world. In a lot of ways, and even in economic ways, but we haven't done a good job of describing that and even attempting to measure it. It's usually left out, and so I'd say one of the big messages of Blue Mind is just let's stop leaving it out. If you don't have a number, that's fine. Just use some words, but when we just ignore it completely at our conferences, in our conversations, in our reports. In academia, we're either saying it's not important, it doesn't exist, or that we don't know about it. and none of those things are true. And so I guess kind of I sometimes sound a bit repetitive on this point, but just keep it in and stop leaving it out. And I think this, you know, this year's Lakes Conference is a great example of not just including it, but really making it a centerpiece of the conversation about the true value of a healthy, accessible lake.
Well, let's run through some of these statistics that are in your book. 21.5 million do fitness swimming. 56.1 million Americans fish. 2.48 million surf. 9.3 million snorkel. 3.8 million sailed. And then if you take in recreational boating, that's 88 million people. That's almost 38% of the population.
Yeah, they've participated in recreational boating in some way or another. And that's a lot of people are connecting with water. And you know, we even see increasingly cities are restoring their waterfronts and they're restoring the river walks. And that, you know, towns are beginning to understand that people want to take a stroll by the river and they want to have a meeting by the water. And, you know, downtowns of cities around the country, around the world are beginning to stop turning their backs on their waterways and to face them.
Those downtowns were originally built facing away from the waterfront because the rivers particularly were open sewers.
Exactly. That was the true value of a river was movement, you know, commerce, but more transportation and waste. It took the waste away quite efficiently. And, you know, you didn't have to build a pipe. You just threw stuff in the river and it disappeared, you know, in quotes, and went to the town downstream for them to deal with. But that's the way we treated our waterways for quite a while. And that, you know, I have to also add that it's not a new idea that water holds cognitive, emotional, psychological, social, and spiritual benefits. This is an ancient idea, but it kind of fell out of fashion for a while there, and we went through a period of you know, I'd say many decades, if not a century, of just really trashing our waterways. And now we're emerging in a time where we're coming back to this ancient idea that water is really good for us, besides just carrying our waste away from our towns.
Well, if I can give you a local example, in Wausau, there's a new riverfront development that could bring millions of dollars of economic activity downtown, but it was only possible because of strict environmental laws that cleaned up the Wisconsin River, and in this particular case, a grant from the Environmental Protection Agency to clean up the brownfield site in the area. Now, however, under the Trump administration, those grants are being eliminated, which means the brownfield site wouldn't have been cleaned up, and the EPA budget is being slashed. A lot of people say that's short-sighted.
I would say it's very short-sighted, and it's really truly a deadly combination. Because if we're in this simultaneous debate about, you know, public health and, you know, how we're going to take care of the health of our population, and environmental health, and those two things, you know, really go hand in hand. And when you understand that a healthy environment is going to lead to healthier people, in particular, when people get out in the environment that is healthy and exercise and recreate and have conversations and just spend more time near, in, on, and underwater and in forests, that is medicine. And but if you're if you're undermining both public health and environmental health, it's really very, very troublesome combination. So I think a more enlightened view would be to bring this conversation together and to support both public health and environmental health through the understanding that they are really one and the same. And your example there in town is a great one. You clean up the brownfield, you clean up the river, and you get economic health along with ecological health, and this is the thing I always come back to, is emotional health, a happier community, because they have better access to better water, for all the reasons, you know, the emotional reasons we've been talking about.
Eric Olson, the stakeholders at the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention, the people who actually own waterfront property, are very familiar with the idea that that waterfront property is valuable. In fact, you know, a real estate agent will say waterfront property is the most important words in the English dictionary.
Yes. Shoreland property owners are – they recognize that they're a fortunate group of people. Either they've inherited a cabin or they've decided to purchase a lakefront or riverfront property. And, yeah, they know it's more expensive. I think what's interesting is that I don't think they ever think through, like, what exactly do they get in exchange. And Jay's perspective in terms of these mental health benefits – I think just even exposing them to that helps them understand and almost rationalize maybe why they're spending that kind of money, because they're getting this type of this benefit that really is otherwise very difficult or expensive to get. So living on a lake, living in near that water resource, it gives you sort of a regular opportunity to go out and just sit and meditate and look at the water. Or maybe it's a regular opportunity to get in your boat and go out and cast a line for a couple hours. You know, that's something that the rest of everybody in Wisconsin and in Illinois and Minnesota, they have to save up money and save up vacation time to be able to do that. So there certainly is, I think, some rationalization or some way to say, you know what, yes, you spend more to buy the property and you probably pay more in taxes, but it's really worth it because you actually are getting something in a regular sort of ongoing benefit from being on that waterfront. So I think it's great that we're going to make that a little bit more plain and put it on the table during this conversation at the convention.
Well, Jay, you talk about how we undervalue our water resources, but that seems to be a real concrete way that you can value it. How much is that waterfront or that shoreline property worth compared to a similar piece of property three or four blocks inland?
Yeah, so that's a great question. The website, the popular real estate website, Zillow.com, did a study in 2014, and they found that nationwide, for all waterfront properties, so lakes, rivers, oceans, bays, they found a 50% premium on average. So that's the average for all waterfront properties. Now, of course, if your waterfront property faces a dead river, a stinky lake, or a very polluted ocean, you're not going to get that premium. You know, it's going to count against you, and people will move away from those places. But if you're adjacent to a clean, healthy, biodiverse body of water, then you get that premium. And in some places, we even see 1,000% premium. 1,000% premium. That's 10 times the value when you jump from the second row to the front row. And that, I mean, literally the second row to the front row is 1,000% premium jump. Now, if you go inland several blocks or a mile, then it drops down even further. But that implies something about being there where you can see, hear, and feel the water, literally, and that people value that so much that they're almost willing to give it more than they have have that experience. And
I think it's important
to not have this be a have and have not conversation, because the emphasis for me is on public space that's the waterfront, that's at the waterfront, and maybe moving that front row back a little bit to create a shared space next to the water. That front row is still going to have a premium, but it can be set back a bit.
And those premiums are ridiculously high in some cases. You mentioned a ramshackle 800-square-foot bungalow in Southern California that was on the oceanfront that was selling for, $7.3 million?
That's right. And that was back in 2003 in the summertime. And that, you know, of course, has gone up quite a bit. And that was, you know, an 800-square-foot, cottage, you could call it, with a carport for $6.3 million. I walked past that one day, and I grabbed the flyer out of the little plastic holder there, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is going in my book, because it was quite stunning, and it really makes the point. But if you ask people why they're willing to pay that much more for that Blue Mind experience, they're not really sure. They'll say something. They'll say, I love it. It feels good. I need it. But if you ask them to dig a little deeper, there isn't much there that they're to justify it, other than they just know they need it and really, really, really want it. And that premium, turns out, the premium, not the house, the property, but the premium is often the biggest financial transaction of their lives, just the premium. And so to say, I'm making the biggest financial transaction of my life, and I don't really know why, is fascinating. And that's kind of where we come in to try to explain that. You know, that's an indication that we are fairly irrational and emotional creatures. And sometimes it's good to plug in some explanation of what you're getting for that extra 50% to 1,000% premium.
Well, a group of people that have always valued water and our lakes and our rivers and our oceans are Native Americans. We have a farm historian, Jerry Apps, who has written a new book called Never Curse the Rain, A Farm Boy's Reflections on Water. He grew up in the Great Depression on a farm without water. And throughout the book, he describes how water has been important to him personally and why he thinks it's also very important to society. And like you, Jay, he thinks it's undervalued. Here he talks about the need to augment our traditional Western view of water as a commodity with the view of Native Americans that water is spiritual and holy. And what he did is he took a group of aspiring higher education administrators on a canoe trip down the Missouri River as part of a management training exercise he was on, and he brought with him an Indian shaman.
I was privileged along the way. I taught at the University of Wisconsin-Madison for 30 years, as many people know, and I was privileged toward the end of my career there to be able to take people on various kinds of tours. And one of the tours we had was we visited and spent a week on the Mandan Indian Reservation in north of Bismarck, North Dakota. And I hired a Mandan shaman to travel with us as we canoed from the Mandan Reservation toward Bismarck. And this shaman, each evening, stood on the banks of the Missouri River with the water gurgling and bubbling and moving south. He, standing by a campfire that we had built, shared with us his tribe's creation story, which had in it water. Water was essential, was a foundational dimension of the creation story of the Mandans. All of them thought that they should not have to ride in a canoe and sleep in a tent and sit on the banks of a river listening to a Native American. My gosh, he didn't even know how to use PowerPoint. Not only should we be concerned about our water and its use and its availability and its cleanliness in the year or two ahead, but as the Native Americans say, we must consider seven generations ahead.
Well, it's Jay Nichols. Jerry Apps are saying that he found at first that the administrators he took on this field trip were bewildered by his decision to confront them with an Indian shaman telling creation stories about water around a campfire.
I can relate to that. I think there's a lot of bewilderment when you try to change such a big conversation in a new way. Or in this case, in an ancient wisdom way, and bringing change can be really really hard for people. And probably one of the best things he could have done is to have that conversation on the water, and so that it wasn't just a theoretical or abstract conversation. It was the reality and of the experience. It reminds me of a few trips that some neuroscientists have made together. Expeditioning on rivers to talk about this exact same topic, and find that their own minds began to change as they spent a week traveling down a river, and I think that's it. I think getting out on the water with the administrators, with the neuroscientists, with the indigenous leadership, with our politicians, and having the experience so that it isn't just an abstract. Words on a page, but it's something that they really experience. But getting out on the water is probably the most important bit of advice I can give.
Well, water is vital not only in the creation story of Native Americans, but it's also a vital part in the creation story of just about all the major religions.
It's all over the world. I think all creation stories, all spiritual traditions have water holds a central place.
You know, in Genesis, the Spirit of God moved on the face of the water.
Exactly. If you look at the 23rd Psalm, and if I can paraphrase, when things are going sideways and you got red mind all around you and you're in the valley of death, what do you want to do? You want to find a meadow by the water and calm your soul. And that's the 23rd Psalm, one of the great most quoted psalms of all of them. And essentially, it's the blue mind psalm. It says, "Go find the water and just chill out." I'm paraphrasing, of course, but that idea that water soothes our soul is truly an ancient idea, and you do find it in all spiritual traditions and all cultures. And the reverence and the spiritual connection to water is, I think it's been diminished, and we need to bring it back.
And Eric Olson, anybody in Wisconsin who vacations on a lake or owns property on a lake knows the spiritual importance of that body of water.
Oh, definitely. In fact, if you go to some lakes in Wisconsin, you'll find entire neighborhoods that were actually established by church groups in the 1920s. When the whole church group would say, "Hey, you know what? Let's all travel together to this lake. Let's build cabins next to each other and essentially have our religious retreat right on the lakes." And you still find it today really in the youth camps, whether it's a church camp or a Y camp. They all recognize that another way to connect with the kids and with their religion is to be on that water resource.
Today on Route 51, our guests are Eric Olson, director of UW Extension Lakes, and Wallace J. Nichols, author of Blue Mind. I'm Glenn Moberg. We're going to take another short break, and here's some music by the Cowsills.
Contributors to WPR include Access Prosthetics, Minnesota Marine Art Museum, and Theater Leela. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Go to WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Attorney Sturgill & Long, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and the Michigan Upper Peninsula. Information is at 888-613-0600.
Lake Huron Rose Superior sings in the rooms of her ice water mansion. Old Michigan steams like a young man's dreams. The islands and bays are for sportsmen. And farther below, Lake Ontario takes in what Lake Erie can send her. The iron boats go as the mariners all know. The gales of November remembered.
Gordon Lightfoot singing about the Great Lakes and taking us into our final segment of Route 51 with our guests Wallace J. Nichols, author of Blue Mind, and Eric Olson, director of UW Extension Lakes, as we discuss the 39th annual Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention, April 5th through the 7th in Stevens Point. I'm Glenn Moberg. Jay, the story of the Edmund Fitzgerald is stuck in the psyche in Wisconsin. Working on the Great Lakes or the ocean is a dangerous life, fraught with hardships, yet there are people who would live no other way.
That's so true, and it's a story I find around the world of people who work hard on the water and risk everything, risk their lives on a daily basis, really, and wouldn't give it up if you offered them a job with even a slightly better salary with a higher level of safety. They would probably pass on that offer, and when asked, kind of like in the vein of the real estate conversation, they can't explain why. They just know they need that sense of freedom of what we refer to as blue mind. And also reminds me of the opening of Moby Dick, which essentially begins with a blue mind narrative that when things are kind of going gray on land and you're feeling grumpy, it's high time to get on the sea. And
well, our oceans are in peril. We have fisheries that are collapsing. The oceans are growing more acidic because of climate change. We have the Great Barrier Reef and other coral reef habitats being bleached out around the world. Yet you write that as long as we have supermarket seafood displays that are stocked with fresh cod, we have trouble mentally processing all those facts.
Yeah, the visual input and the messaging that comes at us from marketers is powerful. It's it's no surprise that modern marketers hire psychologists and neuroscientists to help them, to convince us that all is good, and if we buy their product, that we'll be even better. And I think the lesson there is that we should employ some of those same techniques for restoration and protection of the things that are most vital to our survival and wellness, and bring the neuroscientist and the psychologist over to help us tell a better story about the true value of healthy lakes, rivers, and oceans.
Well, you argue that we can't fix our environment by making people feel bad for brushing their teeth, for taking showers that last more than 5 minutes, eating the wrong kind of fish. You can tell people about the facts about pollution and the science of climate change, but those facts don't sway people. People are swayed by emotion.
Yeah, we've proven that fear, guilt, and facts will not build a healthy, strong, effective movement. That's pretty clear, and the research bears that out. And even in my own life, I remember one day my daughter said, "Hey, Dad, I don't like going to the beach with you." And I said, it broke my heart, and I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, every time we go, you make us clean up trash, and we talk about pollution." And even my friends don't want to go to the beach with you either, by the way. And I realized that I was even failing with my own children in building a love for the water. And so we started going to a different beach that was cleaner and harder to get to and had different oceanographic conditions so that it didn't have trash washing up. And I realized that even that lesson of falling in love first and then we become unstoppable. I think if you surveyed the people coming to this conference, in Stephen's Point, to work on the lakes questions, you will find to a person that at some point they fell head over heels in love with their water, with the way that water made them feel.
Eric Olson?
I would agree. I mean, the people spend their time doing this not just because of some hard scientific reason, but they're driven by a passion, and it's a passion of a sort of a love type relationship. And it's hard to talk about sometimes, but I think even Aldo Leopold, a famous Wisconsin conservationist, pointed out that until we begin to love the natural world and treat it like we treat our best friends and like we treat our friends and family, we are going to keep kind of being hard on it. So we have to sort of embrace that love and really follow through.
Thank you both for being with us. We are completely out of time. We want to thank today's guest, Wallace J. Nichols, the author of Blue Mind, The Surprising Science That Shows How Being Near, In, On, or Underwater Can Make You Happier, Healthier, More Connected, and Better at What You Can Do. You can find out more about his work at wallacejnichols.org. Thanks also to Eric Olson, director of UW Extension Lakes. The 39th Annual Wisconsin Lakes Partnership Convention takes place April 5th through the 7th in Stevens Point. You can find out more at uwsp.edu/UWEXLakes. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jana Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Christopher Cross, Van Morrison, Loudon Wainwright III, The Cowsills, Gordon Lightfoot, and The Beach Boys. Next week on Route 51, our special guest is former U.S. Attorney John Vaudrey. Thanks again for riding along with us today, or sailing along with us. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town. Seaways, seaways, past your threat door.